Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Let's take a moment now to remember neurologist and author Dr. Oliver Sacks, who died early Sunday morning in his home in New York.
Sacks was best known for his finely crafted essays and books such as The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat and Awakenings, in which he used case histories of patients with neurological disorders as a jumping-off point for deeper reflection on the human condition. Here he is in 2013 speaking at NYU.
I will often write a case history because I love case history, I love writing, and as I said, it clears my mind. Sometimes I don't know what I think or feel until I start writing.
And Sacks was honest about how he felt when he wrote in the New York Times this past February that he was dying. Sacks had terminal cancer, and he wrote, quote, "I cannot pretend I am without fear, but my predominant feeling is one of gratitude. I have loved and been loved. I have been given much, and I have given something in return. Above all," he wrote, "I have been a sentient being, a thinking animal on this beautiful planet, and that in itself has been an enormous privilege and adventure." Well, one of Oliver Sacks' colleagues joins us in the studio now. Jerome Groopman is a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and the chief of experimental medicine at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. He is also a staff writer at The New Yorker, where Oliver Sacks wrote very frequently as well. Dr. Groopman, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Pleasure to be with you.
Well, sorry it has to be under these circumstances, though. First of all, just tell us, what were you thinking and feeling when you heard that Dr. Sacks had passed away?
A deep sense of loss. He was a stellar individual, and also a person who I think embodied certain unique traits. He had tremendous generosity of spirit. Personally, before I published anything, I put together some case histories, and they were sent to him, and he gave me just incredible encouragement and ultimately blurbed my first book. Mm-hmm. And honestly, in contrast to some of the behavior which sometimes occurs in academia where people are very competitive or feel threatened, don't encourage young people to thrive and try and progress and see that as a threat, he was completely opposite.
Yeah. You know, I'm really grateful that you came in to have this conversation with us because it suddenly occurs to me that you're a physician. I'm, you know, when it comes to my interactions with the medical world, I'm a patient. So we sit on opposite sides of the divide that Dr. Sacks so frequently bridged in his writing. So can you tell me from the perspective of a doctor, of a physician, when you would read his work, his case studies, his examinations of neurology and the human condition, what did you see?
I see a doctor who is searching for the person and not just seeing the disease or the illness. And that search, remarkably, allowed him to uncover unexpected, even paradoxical, capacity within the human spirit. Diseases or disorders, which often are seen as just completely abnormal and abject, he found a core of humanity and also of ability in ways that were unexpected and sometimes stunning.
Right. I mean, I've read him, he has said once to People magazine that he, quote, "loved to discover potential in people who aren't thought to have any." I mean, that's one of the ways that he sort of broke into the public consciousness with Awakenings, right?
He did that with Awakenings. He did it with, in that situation, people who were, quote, warehoused and thought to be hopeless and written off and catatonic. He certainly did it within the spectrum of autism. He discovered Temple Grandin, a woman who now has a career, not only as a successful business person, who's able to understand in ways that non-autistic people have difficulty how animals might be made most comfortable in a most dignified way in certain settings, and also became a writer herself.
Yeah. So let's talk for a moment about a particular aspect of Oliver Sacks, which has been mentioned in the numerous writings about him these past couple days, including your beautiful essay on him in The New Yorker. And that has to do with his innate empathy. And here he is in 2013, where he remarks on this in an interview he did at NYU.
When I was a patient with a nerve muscle injury in a leg, I found the inability to communicate my feelings to the surgeon almost worse than the what was happening with the leg. One needed someone to listen and someone to be empathic. So I think as a physician and as a writer, one needs to give vocabulary and concepts to people.
Jerome Gruppen, you were nodding your head, yes.
Yes. Having had illness myself and having had painful injuries, I understand exactly what Oliver was saying, that there's almost a wall that is built by the pain, by the debility, by the risk of dehumanization, to be naked in a hospital johnny and poked and prodded and so on. And you need a physician or a nurse who's sensitive to that and has the skill to draw you out and help restore your identity as a full person.
Why do we feel this is such a, I don't want to say it was unique to Oliver Sacks, because it's not, but he seemed to exemplify this empathy that maybe the reason why it seems so stunning to us now is because it's not as common as we'd like it to be in medicine.
Well, I think he resisted a great deal many of the changes that have occurred in medicine. And it's not that he was a Luddite. He read Nature and Science and the New England Journal regularly and so on. But he really believed in doctoring in a way that stripped away all the technology, removed all the barriers, and tried to connect directly with the person. And I also think that in part because of his family upbringing. His mother was one of the first women surgeons in England. His father was a GP. He writes in his autobiography how he heard stories about people from a very young age, and he understood that an individual's narrative was as important as their clinical diagnosis.
You know, for those of us in the lay public who read his works, that sense of wanting to understand the individual within a spectrum of disorders was so palpable. But I also wonder, I mean, it didn't make him some friends within the medical establishment, right? I mean, he did have critics who said that maybe he favored the narrative over the science.
Well, I think there are two things. One is that he was banished from academic medicine. Because he didn't move in a direction of statistics and numbers and clinical trials and so on, but he wanted to capture the individual patient. And this was anathema during his training. And I think the second is that unfairly he's been criticized as somehow exploiting people that he cared for.
Right.
And never would he write, or would I write, or any other physician writer that I know, without the express permission and understanding of the individual. And in fact, by writing these stories, they felt grateful to him because he advanced their humanity in the public sphere.
Yeah. You know, I was going to ask you about that because I was thinking that, you know, he was writing about people who had these baffling neurological disorders that science in many ways still doesn't understand. And you've written about similarly challenging stories. I was thinking about one last year that you wrote in the New Yorker about pediatric palliative care, right? What could be more difficult for family members to deal with? And yet I felt like I learned so very, very much about these remote corners of medicine. Like I was exploring with both you and Dr. Sacks in a way that we don't get access to on a daily basis. And it reminded me how he considered himself a naturalist to a certain degree, a 19th century explorer.
Exactly. He was very influenced by Darwin in the 19th century, evolutionary biologist. And also, as you know, one of his collections is titled An Anthropologist on Mars, as though he is living within the setting, within the location, within the culture of people who are seen as almost Martians by many mainstream individuals, Temple Grandin or Stephen Wiltshire, an artist with autism who can reproduce in fine detail with a blink of an eye. And so I think what he did was, by going to these extremes and to these usually undiscovered parts of the human experience. He showed that they are directly connected with our own humanity.
Yeah. You know, I'm happy to say that obviously Oliver Sacks lives on through his own writing, and also the way he's inspired a generation of physicians to sort of undertake the same explorations. I mean, you, Atul Gawande, just to name a couple right here in our own backyard. But I wonder, do you think that the thing that he exemplified the most of bringing humanity to a profession which by definition should be so intensely humane and human, it's medicine after all, that in this way that his work can continue to hopefully inspire young physicians, not necessarily maybe to be writers, but in how they just engage with their patients every day.
Absolutely. And I think he is a vital counterpoint to so many of the directions of medicine, which move into the anonymous and generic and so on. And he once said, with regard to Tourette's, visiting a doctor who had Tourette's, a surgeon in Canada, and showing his extraordinary skill, but he noted no two patients with a single diagnosis are ever the same. They're always individual in some way. And he meant that not only clinically, but he certainly meant that with regard to their character and without how they adapted to their condition.
Well, Jerome Groopman is a professor at Harvard Medical School. He's also the chief of experimental medicine at Beth Israel Deaconess Center and a staff writer for The New Yorker. He wrote a remembrance of Dr. Oliver Sacks at The New Yorker called Oliver Sacks, the Doctor. We have a link to it at our website, radioboston.org. Dr. Groopman, always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Pleasure to be with you, Megan.